from Saratoga Racecourse on a bit of a humid Friday after some typically violent upstate New York storms yesterday. Driving in this morning to the racetrack from Greenwich, only saw two mighty oaks felled, being chopped up by the road crews to keep them off the road. Good morning, everybody, and not just back at the racetrack, but back with Hammer. He's back.
We've shown up here, right?
He shows up everywhere.
Next to the Shoeshine Stand here at beautiful Saratoga, coming out of Del Mar Run last week.
Well, you know, speaking of Del Mar Runs, and I'm looking around for him because he was here about a half an hour ago, Bill Strauss, who's waiting for Hot Rod Charlie tomorrow. And Bill's been here for almost the whole week, I think, and is obviously going to hang around for the sale. So I said to him, boy, you know, for a guy, when we talked to Jay Pridman, you know, Jay, home game, certainly a home game for Bill Strauss at Del Mar, but here he is at the Spa for 10 days.
Well, when you're part owner of a horse called Hot Rod Charlie, I think he's probably made a few trips around the world.
That's true.
Literally.
That's true,
horse.
Actually.
And you know, Bill, of course, has been around horse racing for a while, has the restaurant across the street from Del Mar.
The Moose.
The Pompo Moose.
The Moose is loose.
And just a great guy. He's one of those guys you're just rooting for. You just if he's involved, you're in. And I didn't see him this morning. In fact, I was back on the across the other side looking for Leandro and the horse, and I looked at my watch, and I had to do a half sprint to get over here, so I didn't, but I'll go back and see them. But I saw Barbara Livingston's picture yesterday. Did you see that?
I don't think so, no.
With him rearing up in the air, and Leandro's got the shank. Oh, it was great.
Point given style.
Just a great shot. And so he's full of vim and vigor, and he's going to be a horse to look at, without a doubt, come tomorrow.
Well, and it's such an interesting... It's such an interesting group. I mean, personally for me, between Life is Good and Olympiad as the 6-5 and 2-1 favorites, but then between Hot Rod Charlie, 9-2, American Revolution is going to be overlooked in here. I'm really anxious to hear what Scully's got to say. We'll have Dave Grenig. We'll have Nick Tamaro. I asked Jay Pridman if he's got an opinion, if he wants to express for the Whitney as part of the Breeders' Cup Classic Division, which, of course, Jay will track right up to Keeneland. Speaking of the Breeders' Cup Classic and the division, how about today? Opening later this afternoon, closing on Sunday, the Breeders' Cup Classic Future Bet. We'll talk to Tim Schramm in about 10-12 minutes. We were going to have Jim Goodman, but Jim's got an appointment right at 9:15. So we'll catch up with Goodman as Keeneland approaches. Plenty of chance to talk to Jim about the Keeneland fall, of course, but Tim Schramm will join us, and actually we'll probably even get a little update on how many people are qualified for the BCBC, which Tim runs as well.
Yeah, which has turned into the tournament to win, other than the one in Las Vegas.
It's the two majors. The two majors.
And I got to admit, American Revolution,
I would not dismiss it casually.
You got me onto this horse about 3 months ago.
Or more.
Maybe even more, and turned him on. And I started looking at him last night. You know, the horse went to Carter's, a three-year-old. New York, you don't just... That doesn't go together. Three-year-old New York bred winning the Carter. So I've been checking him out, and you're right. He's going to be overlooked. And he's got some numbers that fit a little bit in there. You mentioned that. But the Breeders' Cup Classic Future, I just read about this a couple days ago, and I'm thinking, they never had this before, right? I mean, in Vegas you can bet. I mean, you
correct.
Put that off track. But
yes.
I mean, this is similar to the Kentucky Downs Future.
Or Kentucky Derby.
Kentucky, yeah. I'm in Kentucky Downs mode here, so I'm passing out books. The Kentucky Derby Future, which is good. I think they've listed 20 horses.
24.
24. And then
23
with an all other.
Which
so,
seems improbable, that unless a Euro shows up that, you know, is unexpected.
And as they'll go through them, I wrote down a half a dozen of them. You know, Flightline is the favorite, opening up at 3-1, and Life is Good right behind at 7-2. But, you know, off the bat, the Derby winner's 30-1, Epicenter's 20-1, and it'll be interesting to see where some of these things go as they are, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of handle there is. I think there'll be a lot of interest in it, to tell you the truth.
Well, people have been calling for it, and as I rifle through papers trying to find, because I did print out the page, and so it's in here somewhere. I've got there's about nine things actually that I'm realizing I'm going to have to mention, including Tommy Roberts' biography. I've been looking forward to talk to Tommy. It's called "Have I Got a Story for You," which should be unbelievable. Tommy's life. You've heard him with us many times over the years, but not lately. So Tommy's book, and he's going to be signing next week. So you can look forward to that.
I'm living life on the road without a printer, so I've been writing.
That's a problem.
Writing a lot of things
that's
down.
That's a distinct problem.
Right. I think, quick story, weirdly, I got here too early. I usually come on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
And so, long story short, I'm here early, and I had to call a friend and ask for the old couch trick for a few days. So, you know, if your friend's around and they got a couch, you're in. So I'm here.
At this time of year.
Yeah. I'm actually staying with Martin Panza and his friend Greg.
Oh, very nice.
We rented a place up here for most of the meet, and so squeezed right in there. And the beautiful part is I can walk here.
Yep.
Which we like to do. But it's great. It's Saratoga. It's kind of it's like a camping trip. As long as somebody has a tent, you're in.
There you go. I volunteered. Greenwich
did.
To you. You can't walk. You can't. That's tremendous. Boy, that's Point Given style up on his hind legs. Hot Rod Charlie, pretty funny with Leandro.
Yeah.
Save it. You know what? I'm going to save it. I did find the numbers, but Tim's going to join us in less than 10 minutes. Let me give you a quick rundown of what's going on, because there is a lot to consider, and of course, you know, we'll be dominated by Whitney conversation, the test, the Glens Falls, everything that's going on. It's Hall of Fame Day. I know Jay Pridman is going to address the Hall of Fame, principally the induction of Beholder and Tepin, the two principals, and then some of the other committee inductees. But I know Jay, of course, who covers and is heavily involved as a committee member in the hall. So Jay will talk about that. But there's the Hall of Fame steak, which is very good today, really good, as well as the first of the two restricted. The two restricted stakes of the weekend. The De La Rose, which is one of my favorites, the De La Rose on Sunday, the Troy is the other stake today. The Troy is the other stake today. It's the Lure that is the counterpart to the De La
That's
Rose.
That's on Saturday, yes.
Lure is Saturday, the De La Rose Sunday. But we also have to note, there's a ton of action. Mountaineer, I know that Scully has looked at Mountaineer, so let him handle some of that, as well as it's West Virginia Derby Day. There's also the Governor's Handicap, which came up good, the two graded stakes at Mountaineer. There is there's the Jersey Shore, which if you have not looked at the Jersey Shore, I think Marcus Hirsch is going to touch on it because it came up really good. I think he included it in his DRF game plan. Marcus is going to join us after we talk to Tim Schramm. And more. Del Mar, obviously. We'll talk Del Mar with Scott Shapiro and with Jay, the Clement Hirsch, tomorrow.
And there's one other race.
There's the devil trying to repeat.
There's one other race I need to mention today. Jimmy and Tara on their way up.
Oh, for Tara's horse.
Sixth race, the one horse, run for cover. First-time shooter from the rail.
I saw Jimmy the other day.
They are coming up, and so we are pumped up. That's that's the first Whitney. That's our first Whitney right there.
There you go.
So,
I love it.
Mark Cassie trained, and We're looking to get a picture taken today. So safe driving to Jimmy and Tara on their way up. We'll see you shortly. They might make an appearance here in the next hour or so. But
I love it.
Got to run for cover. That's what we're all about today. And if you notice, I have my L.A. Dodgers hat on today.
I figured that you would be the candidate, as it happens. Not that Jay Pridman won't say nice things about Vin Scully, because I'm sure he would. But he's not a Dodger fan, never has been. So maybe you're the better candidate to wax poetic and appreciate Scully.
You know, I knew I was going to talk about it, and I hope I can hold it together.
Wow.
Let me tell you, Vin Scully was, you know, it's like everybody that grew up in L.A. at that time lost their favorite uncle. He was just part of the landscape. And you know, one thing I got to say about Vin Scully is I don't think he was ever taken for granted. You know, he was appreciated every day, every game that you heard from him, every household. There's never been when we were blessed in L.A. with, you know, Chick Hearn and Vin Scully and Dick Enberg and Bob Miller. I mean, we just, you know, had the best with Trevor and Harry Henson. But Vin Scully, I don't think I've ever, he was the best of the best. He was such a great man. But you heard him wherever you went during the summer. I mean, you walked into the store to get a candy bar,
yep.
Or, you know, even at the baseball games, you would go to games and people would bring the radios.
Sure.
And never once did you ever hear somebody go, hey, turn that off.
Sure.
It was never. There's a story that someone wrote in the paper the other day that on a Sunday afternoon, if you went to the beach at Malibu and you walked down to Newport, you wouldn't miss a pitch.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And it's true.
That's
and
great.
So, you know, it's almost like, you know, that, like I told my wife that, I mean, Gina, it's over. I mean, that era is now officially gone. And, you know, not that I can't even tell you who a lot of announcers are anymore, but it was felt all over Southern California. And, you know, like I said, a little piece of everyone's gone and good man. And so had to put the L.A. Dodger hat on just for
I love it.
Just for that. So.
No, I'm glad because for me, a rival voice, announcer's voice. I mean, he's had so many. There were so many things you've been watching and clips and things actually you forgot. I mean, when you realize how long he was around and, you know, the calling, for instance, Hank Aaron's 715th home
right.
run.
Well, it was a Dodger game.
Exactly.
So you figure, of course he was there, but you forget about that.
Yeah. And
but he could turn every game into Hank Aaron's 715th home run. And that was the beauty of him, just telling stories and, you know, just doing what he did. They were showing some. He was on TV, apparently, when Joe Montana threw the catch, and it's funny. I heard that on the radio in the store where I was working at in San Francisco, and other people that I remember where I was laying on a couch in a houseboat in Sausalito when Kirk Gibson hit the home run.
You know what's funny about that? Because they showed that a million, but it's actually. Who was it? The Jack Buck?
The call that you hear.
It's the Jack Buck call for me that is most, you know, I don't believe what I just saw. And that one, that's the one I associate with Kirk Gibson's home run.
And I can appreciate that, too. And I just remember the other one. I can remember, this is the weirdest memory. I remember, and I look back, and I think I was like 8 years old when this happened. But I can remember where I was when Don Drysdale was going for the consecutive
innings,
shutout innings. Where I was when he broke it. 68, I think it
there
was.
You go.
And I remember where I was. I was playing, we were playing football at the park in the corner, tossing the ball around, and somebody's dad was there, you know, watching us, of course, and he had the radio on. And we all stopped when this was going on. It was just like, and the way he described that is just unbelievable. And whenever Sandy Koufax was pitching, my gosh, he was just fantastic. But anyway, not too many broadcasters that, you know, are part of your life as you grow up. And like I said, Chick Hearn was, of course, as a Laker, but he was almost there, but he wasn't Vin Scully. So anyway, rest in peace, Vinny.
Well, I appreciate you doing that. We should reach Case. Let me send you, because we haven't talked to Tim in a while, let me send you Tim Schramm's number, and we'll get Tim in here. They were gonna be together at Jim's office, but instead, we'll do this, all right? Who else is going to... Dave Greniglader, who else is supposed to be here that I'm forgetting? We'll check in with Papa. We'll get some form to win plays. So expect that. And I know I'm there's more. There's always more. That Tina said, are you set for the show? I said, I think I'm oversubscribed. Papa, no, I think I got you. Shram, Marcus Hirsch, Scott Shapiro, Jay Pridman, James Scully, Hammer with us, Nick Tamaro, Dave Grenick. Oh, Callie is going to stop by as well, and we'll get, she's exercise riding right now, and Popo, and probably some more surprises. I think I got Tim Schramm in the background. Tim, good morning.
Good morning. How are you? How's everybody?
We're good. We got Rick Hammerly with me, and we mentioned right off the top of the show, we dove right into the Whitney, and with the group that's been assembled, obviously, a lot of potential impact to the way people approach this Breeders' Cup Classic Future Wager, which horse players have been clamoring for, and here it is, first of two.
Right, exactly. Let me just talk about that real quickly. I mean, with conjunction with Breeders Teamland, we're launching our first Breeders Cup Future Wager this weekend, and it'll start today at noon and go till Sunday. And in the second pool, it's a win only pool, so we're making it simple for everyone. It's win only, and our second pool will be Labor Day weekend. We'll also offer the futures wager Friday going through Monday. So there's 23 individual interests, and the 24th is obviously the field for all others. So as you said, the Whitney is a Breeders' Cup winning your in race this weekend, and four of the 23 individual interests are in that race. So.
Well, and to give everybody an idea of how they're priced, at least to opening the wager, Life is Good, 7-2, and then Olympiad, 9-2, Hot Rod Charlie, 20-1, American Revolution, 20-1, but of course, you know, if anybody other than the top pair were to upset this, well, then... It's always what we've gotten the feeling or the experience through Derby futures, Tim. You know, we know what happens with the ones that run the weekend of.
Right, it makes everybody jumps on them. Right, wagon jumpers. Right. So yeah, if you look at obviously American Revolution, Hot Rod Charlie, Olympiad, and Life is Good, all in the Whitney. Just look at their in the money type of thing. I mean, they're all like obviously Olympiad and Life is Good. They're 7-10 lifetime as in winners, and 7-9 as in winners. And then American Revolution, 7 out of 9 in the money, and obviously the always competitive Hot Rod Charlie, he's 13, 12 out of 16 in the money. So they're always right there. It's a competitive field for sure. So we're looking forward to the Whitney, and obviously the weather's supposed to be warm, but we hope it's not too warm. So.
Well, right now, no, we should be okay on that front. The other thing that is a constant threat a little bit is wet weather, but we'll
right.
See. Let's also note in this group the presence of 3-year-olds, and there's not going to be anybody you wouldn't think, Tim, when you look at, obviously Life is Good and Flight Line's 3-1, Olympiad, etc. But when you look at the 3-year-olds, maybe that's where people are going to do their speculation, because Cyberknife 30-1, for instance, skipped down to Zandon 30-1, and remember where this Breeders' Cup Classic is going to be run. Taba 30-1, not necessarily targeting the classic. They might go a little bit more of a conservative route. The Derby winner is 30-1, Rich Strike. Epicenter 20-1. And in fact, we discussed already this week that the 3-year-olds look slightly up against it versus this group of older horses. But when you're considering, what they're going to be, where they're going to be the first weekend in November in terms of their development, that's why you like a future wager. That's what you're looking to find.
That's right. You're looking for improvement. So these are the type of horses that can really jump up at this time of year. Obviously, early in the year as well when you're in the Triple Crown season. But, it's funny that you mentioned that because I did pop my head in the racing department quickly yesterday, and I said, how well did a three-year-old done in our history in the class? And they said they won that almost half of them. So
sure.
I'm not sure. I haven't looked into that detail at all, but that's what they said to me quickly. But I just thought that was interesting. Because obviously we have, I think, 10 out of these 23 are three-year-olds. So, again, you've got horses like Zandon. Those people, everybody saw his move at Keeneland before the Derby. So, and then he's back in the Jim Danny race, good to get Epicenter. So, I mean, he's a horse that can, wouldn't be a surprise. It'd be a big payoff for sure with his future. But would anybody be really surprised if he ran a great Breeders' Cup Classic?
No.
No?
Well,
no.
Everybody, when you're looking at these three-year-olds, you've got at least one intermediate step for all of them before the Classic,
right,
which is, Travers, Pennsylvania, yep, Derby, etc. So,
Pacific Classic and Jockey Club, yep, Gold Cup, for,
yep,
sure, and the Travers, obviously. So, I mean, yep, there's a lot of things, a lot of races out there still. So, I think this weekend, there's going to be a lot of value. And one thing, obviously, everybody got to think about is flight line. I mean, obviously, Sadler's been talking a lot about the horse, not talking a lot, but basically saying when he does talk about him, he says he's magnificent. So how many people are going to put their money on flight line, or is he going to be too favored that they're going to look elsewhere for some prices? Does that drive the price up of flight line where you're going to get 3, 4, 5 to 1 at this time, and during the Breeders' Cup Classic, he goes out to the Classic and blows the doors off everybody, he's going to be a real favorite maybe in the Classic, Breeders' Cup Classic, and he'll be getting real value here. So, we'll see what happens.
Go ahead.
Hey, Tim, it's Rick here. Yeah, commenting on that, too. You, oddly enough, the two favorites, Flightline and Life is Good, have yet to go that Classic distance, so that'll be interesting to factor,
yeah, exactly,
in as well. This is a good thing that you guys have started, and I'm sure you're going to test the waters here, and maybe in the next years or two you might have another couple races involved in this, but it's a great thing to start out, especially now people are starting to get in that mood. Once we get to Del Mar and Saratoga in the schedule, everyone starts looking ahead to the Breeders' Cup, and as the trainers have already counted backwards and see where they're going to run. So it's great.
Right.
Glad you're starting it this early too, to get a shot to some of those three-year-olds who are yet to have that next start. Like Epicenter, anybody that was here and saw him run here the other day, if he's anywhere near 30 to 1 or something, that's the type of horse,
exactly,
you want to take a shot
on. That's the whole point of this. I got a couple of technical questions, Tim. Did you guys consider an exacta opportunity the way the Derby future does it?
Yeah, sure. We thought about it, but our concern more was we haven't gotten to the point where it's really taken off, and we tried sporadically. So our goal this year was, as Rick mentioned, to bring it in earlier. Bring it in earlier than we usually do, because when we do it later in the year, the field's basically made, and you're basically getting the same odds that you were so at the Classic. So we thought, okay, let's bring it in a month or two early, and then see how the first one goes to get the interest of guys. But it's just, even the field wager, obviously, the morning line, people think that you got the runners in the Classic because they're making the field such a high price. And in the Derby, obviously, the field always goes off because the three-year-olds are quite unknown and so forth. The Derby field goes off in favor. So you won't have that in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Well, you don't know what Europeans are headed over. That's what, if you're taking in all others, you might get a class of Europeans show up and go, oops, maybe you get, whatever the price,
yep,
is. But as you know, as a rule, if you're making these bets on this side, you're looking for 25 to 1 minimum at least, I would think.
Yeah,
when I make a future bet, but that's just me, and unless you're making, yep, a large bet on something. But this is, unlike the Derby where you're kind of, you're a little bit of wish and a prayer because they haven't had much form. What's kind of neat with these, all these horses have form, so you have something to go by.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you mentioned the international horse. We even got Emblem Road in there. Well, obviously, a morning line 30 to 1. He won the Friday Cup. the Saudi Cup, and then he took him, trainer worked him on turf, or put him in a turf race internationally that didn't work out. So they're still aiming for the Breeders' Cup Classic. He's a horse, obviously not going to be known by a lot of Americans, but he's a horse that can go 30-1 if he goes across, you know, for the wager.
Tim Schramm with us from Breeders' Cup and the Breeders' Cup future wager on the Classic, kind of breaking the ice for this concept that you know, meets with a lot of interest, certainly when it comes to Derby future. Tim, what would you consider a success in terms of pool size?
If we can get a couple $100,000 in there, it'd be great, you know? That's my goal anyway, personally. So I think we could do that. $250,000 would be awesome.
Excellent. And since we've got you, got a couple of minutes at the bottom of the hour, Marcus Hirsch joining us from the Racing Forum. But Tim, give us a BCBC update. How many seats? And you know, give a little plant a little seed for people that either haven't considered the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, perhaps.
Okay, obviously the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, it's just remarkable. This continues to grow so much. As a matter of fact, last year we had 534 entries in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, which was, 13th year, grew 24% from the prior year. So it's amazing the growth it still has. We treat the players well, especially when they come to the event. We got a lot of perks for them. And last year, Matt Miller was the winner. He walked away with bankroll him and his prize money, $543,000. So it continues to grow every year. This year we got we're about 10% above where we were the prior year last year. So I think we're sitting at 160 entries already. So we've got a lot of people coming late, obviously, because it's offered online as well as on track. But the experience at Keeneland will be great this year. We've got a great setup for the people, food and beverage included. You get tickets for the Breeders' Cup, you and a guest. Well worth the money. You're gonna be firing on Breeders' Cup weekend. Get into the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge because it's a no-brainer, really, for the value you get, for the first player.
No doubt about it. And, of course, Jim Goodman and his staff accommodate all the players, and there's so many that love the Keeneland fall and spring contests, the Grade One Gamble, and this is one of the favorite venues for anybody, Breeders' Cup or no Breeders' Cup. This, of course, the third Breeders' Cup at Keeneland after the American Faro Cup, and then the sort of bedeviled pandemic Breeders' Cup at Keeneland. So
exactly.
back to Keeneland. All right.
Okay. Appreciate it. Any thoughts? I don't know what you heard out there about Neff being in the Long Jeans Breeders' Cup Classic future wager.
I was going to bring her up, and she obviously is a horse that appreciates a classic distance and a route of ground. So it is an interesting inclusion. And again, that's one of those things that's speculative. That future wagerers look for. Although the one thing about her in here, she's 20-1 morning line, and if she were to run in the Breeders' Cup, she could be 20-1 or more. Race.
I agree. Yeah, I agree for sure. I think she'll be higher than 20-1. Even on the future pool. But, I mean, she ran great in the American Oaks, and obviously second in the Oaks to Lucas the Taurus and Kentucky Oaks, and obviously can go the distance, but second in the Belmont. So maybe she runs in the Travers and you really get a feel for things, you know? So,
she's an Alabama
candidate.
Alabama natural, right. You know?
And if Todd wasn't so loaded with other older horses, I would think more. But
that's true.
He's kind of set.
How many? In fact, let's add that up. How many of these are in Todd's barn? Right. American Revolution.
Right.
Charge it.
Seven.
Seven.
Seven. Yep. 5, 6, 7. Yep.
Wow.
And the Happy Saver's not even in there, right?
Wow. Yeah, that's right. And there's no Happy Saver.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe. Yeah, no happy saver, but again, obviously he can, if he steps up this weekend, we don't have him as an individual wagering interest, but obviously you got the field to wager if you love him that much, you know? But, yeah, so we got East Coast trainers. We've got Fletcher, obviously, with a handful. We've got Cox with three of them. We've got Brown out there with a couple, and obviously Fletcher with his field. And on the West Coast, we've got and Chuck McGee as well on the East Coast. And on the West
Kind of looks like the feature every day here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we've got a few Baffers out west. A few Baffers out west with Mandela. And obviously Sadler's Horse and O'Neill as well. So key trainers, obviously, everywhere. But, I think this future is very interesting. Even though the win bet not exact or anything like that, it's pretty simple. But there's definitely going to be some odds for people if they want to play.
Tim Schramm, everybody, Breeders' Cup, and the Breeders' Cup Classic Future Wager starts today at noon, goes till Sunday, and obviously the Whitney will have plenty of influence on it. Tim, good to connect, and we'll check in as we get closer to November with you and with Jim, and we'll also, you know, also be helping guide contest players toward BCBC as well.
Right. Okay, thanks, guys. Have a good day, huh? Have a great weekend.
You too. Tim Schramm, everybody.
Thanks, Tim.
Does a great job with, you know, I associate Tim with BCBC. He usually makes, usually about 2 weeks out, he makes the annual visit and appeal to, you know, for people to consider. And really, if you're a serious player and somebody that's got a sizable bankroll and you have not considered the BCBC, you really need to. It's a $10,000 buy-in. And it just make, I mean, maybe you partner up and two of you put up five each, or four people, 2,500 each. But if you bet anything in the four figures and up, you know, and up, the BCBC may very well be for you. And your bankroll is your bankroll that you make, and then the prize pool. And it's $7,500 toward the, you know, your bankroll, and $2,500 to the prize pool, and it grows every year, as Tim mentioned.
And if it's going to be your day, you might as well have it be your day in the contest.
Exactly.
It doesn't mean you can't make your own individual wagers outside the contest. But no, I have yet to reach that level. But I know I have friends that play, and you know, I end up rooting through them for stuff. What'd you bet? How they do it? Interesting how these guys do it, and you know, especially guys like Marshall Graham, and how they put together their plays. And many times, you had Marshall on, was it 2 years ago when he won?
Oh, sure.
And, you know, you think, oh, you know, I hit a $3,000 super trifecta. The simple, you know, I bet this, and I bet a $100 exacta or a $200 double. Very simply done sometimes. It's not that, you know, take a shot unless it's at the end and you have to do it, but very methodically played out by a lot of people.
Well, and there's always that Breeders' Cup Classic last race monster bet that typically decides it. Marcus Hirsch from the Daily Racing Forum joins us, and there's any number of topics for Marcus because, you know, Marcus covers a lot of ground. Marcus, good morning.
Hello, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Rick Hammerly with me as well.
Hi, Marcus.
Hey, Rick.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Marcus, between West Virginia and Mountaineer Derby, West Virginia Derby Day, and that good governors that they put together, and it's always a good card. What we've got going on here, then there's actually some hard news. I think that Marty actually covered it, but you know, the news involving, you know, the Arlington Million situation at Churchill, canceling the pucker up, and the,
yeah, that's doing
the,
well,
secretariat, yeah. Well, and word came in the last couple of weeks that they were continuing to have trouble with that course, and I saw you used it as part of your advance, you know, particularly with fillies and mares.
I did.
Which story? I think so, right? You talked about...
The only reference in anything I wrote was Mr. Wireless, who was in the governor's at Mountaineer Casino Racetrack and Resort. He is not running in that race because he's running on that card at Churchill instead. There's a mile and 3/16, $200,000 dirt race for older horses. I can't. Maybe it's the Fort Larned or something. Anyway, I don't think I've made mention of it, but I have talked to a couple people, and I know they had turf works the other day, and I don't have any first-hand knowledge. Second-hand knowledge didn't look promising. I just wonder, we'll see where things go. It's unfortunate that they did make a capital investment in racing, that corporation, and this was the result. It's kind of promised from the start, but... of course, I know a lot of people are a little bit missed about the Arlington Million being run, at Churchill Downs when there was a perfectly suitable, lovely turf course that could have been used for it this summer. So, I don't know, maybe there's a bit of karma involved there.
There's been some of that intimation. All right, well, then let's dive into the myriad of coverage that you provided this week, and let's get Mountaineer in here and talk about this West Virginia Derby. We were referencing the three-year-olds, and of course we're coming off of weekends that saw Cyberknife next the Haskell, you absolutely clobbered that. Well done. Then we had the Resurrection of Epicenter, a horse that you got to be around all winter at New Orleans, and so the three-year-old makeup hasn't shifted, but it is getting influenced by performance. And here's the typical sort of assembly of, I don't want to call them second tier 3 year olds. There's some nice horses that. All right, sort of a second tier 3 year old bunch.
I mean,
although Simplification.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, Simplification. Was a serious Derby candidate. Then came out of the Preakness having bled. He's trying to reboot here. Rudy Brissett trying to find the right level with We the People, who emerged at Oaklawn and subsequently the Belmont Tri. Wasn't bad, but he settled for a minor award. Your thoughts on this West Virginia Derby?
Well, it's not. If you're a second tier 3 year old, that's still pretty good. There are a lot of tiers below that, many, many tiers. And I would say that this group kind of like is what, if you were a West Virginia Derby coordinator, you would be hoping to get. Because these horses might not be quite up to the Travers, but they're plenty good. I do think that. There are only seven horses, and then as far as actual win contenders, I don't think King Adamant has it in him. I don't know that he loved being stuck inside last time in Indiana. He was outside in Texas, but I don't think that race, the Texas Derby, ended up being that great. And then I like Skippy Longstocking as an underneath exotic play in the Belmont, but I don't think. I can't really see him winning this race. He's going to be competitive. But to me, the win contenders are Simplification, Homebrew, and We the People. I mean, Homebrew is the outlier in this group in that he wasn't a Triple Crown horse at all. I will say that his Pegasus kind of took me aback. I did not know he was that kind of horse. That was a very sharp effort. He already got a mile and an eighth. He's probably the most progressive of all these horses with the greatest latitude to improve. Brad Cox, he pointed out himself, he hasn't been winning. He's lost 16 in a row, heaven forbid. But a lot of his horses have run competitively. I think this horse is on a good work pattern since his last race. I would not favor him, though. Simplification did get the great trip. I thought in the Derby he was 15th. That was a good place to be. And Zandon was kind of a slightly better version of him. Epicenter was the one that had the tougher journey. I gave him all the credit. I think that's being borne out. But Simplification absolutely can win this. I haven't been able to see any of his workout videos, first basics, you mentioned the bleeding. But I favored We the People here. I didn't like him in the Belmont at all, just because having watched the horse a little bit, he just seems like the wrong kind of horse to settle enough to get a mile and a half. He's a little bit fiery. Brissette even said that Lasix being available in this race is a factor because he has been more settled after getting Lasix. And this horse's approach in before he goes to the starting gate is very important. I don't think the Peter Pan was totally an illusion. It may have flattered him slightly, but you know, Brissette has moved into his half his stables at Windstar, half at Keeneland. This horse went to Windstar right after the Belmont, and Brissette has been working him himself. He said the works look good on paper. He also said he's very conscientious about recording the proper times, even though it's record your own at these training centers. He's got a good outside draw. I think he's the speed of the race, but can spy anyone inside that wants to go. And I like We the People at a pretty unappealing price, most likely.
Well, and part of the frustration in looking at this, they're really, the four obvious candidates are the four, the four favorites.
Yeah, there's no value. I don't see.
Yeah,
value.
There's nothing. Yeah, unless somebody, homebrew it 3-1 if that holds or ticks up at all. Feels like the alternate
marginal value. Right?
Well put.
Yeah.
Well put. All right, let's move up into the other graded stake, the Governors, the Grade Three, and this put together an interesting field.
Yeah, I have nothing interesting to add about the interesting field. Unfortunately, I don't have any big upside candidates here. These Thistledown horses, like this Perfect Sense, I don't know where this form came from. He has been pretty impressive. He's got some confirmation issues that will catch up to him again eventually. Silver Prospector is wildly inconsistent, but on his best day, he can win this race. But I just think Folsom is very, very well spotted. Taking a shorter price in a horse like this, whose best races are always from well off the pace, is maybe a fool's errand. He did. He's got a nice break between races. I think he just bounced in Alishiba. Maybe no Lasix had something to do with that. We're always doing the Lasix guessing game these days, on, off, off, on. But his Oaklawn Mile did get a setup, but I thought he ran especially well there. And in his most recent race, the pace was entirely against him. And the horse who ran second is in good form. Not anything like a grade one or grade two horse, but Twilight Blue is... He's pretty talented, and you can see they were seven lengths clear up third. So Folsom is going to be shorter than 3-1, but I also think there's pace in here to set things up for him, and he's going to be very formidable on the day.
Nice. All right. Any of the other nope. spots?
No,
the two graded stakes. That's fine.
I ran out
That's
of time
all right.
for that.
No, those two were, the two good spots for those that are looking, and we'll see, maybe James Scully may have and added something.
There are some good horses running. I mean, In Love is running for $75,000. He won a grade one turf mile last fall. That's pretty shocking. But anyway, that was the only thing that stood out to me was his presence in that race, not a play.
All right, it is a nice card. It starts at 2:00 Eastern. Mountaineer with their Derby and Governor's card, the two graded stakes. And Marcus, I do want to ask you about the Jersey Shore, which kind of jumped in at the quarter pole as a race that needed to be looked at.
Agreed. I did not see a 10 horse field. Yeah, and fast horses too. I mean. It hit a little niche, I guess, with horses who aren't going to be running in the Allen Durkin, so on and so forth. Ton of speed in this race. I think the inside speed horses, like Defend and Provocateur, Pass and Stowe, they're going to be in trouble. this horse Senbei, the New York bred for Clement, is he may be the speed of the speed. He's drawn outside. I think he's got a good chance. Lightning Larry, I think, is, you know, with the big overlay, 12-1 in the Chick Lang, because he had some pretty good form over the winter too. I think he's legit, and he can stalk just a little bit too. Another decent draw, but I went with Nakatomi for Ward. I just think, the Monmouth track has at times, more so in the last month than earlier in the meet, been very kind to speed and difficult to make a sustained run on at all. But this horse is not going to be out the back door. He's just a kind of classic stalking type. Good dirt record. He beat Happy Soul easily. That was a very precocious filly for Ward in his career debut. I'd say the only disappointing race he's run was the Saratoga Special, where he had an inside draw on a 10-horse field and just wasn't quite at his best. All his other races are good, and I thought his last race against older horses was excellent. Another horse with a nice break, like 6 weeks into this dark active work pattern for Ward. Gaffalione is coming to ride, I guess. I think he's going to run really well. He's 4-1 on the line. I wouldn't be surprised if he's shorter than that, unfortunately.
You know, at 8-1, Witty caught my eye. McLean Hendricks and Carol Cedeno comes up the turnpike from Delaware to stick with Witty, and it's got enough speed to, you know, from the inside to set up shop and get kind of an inside, maybe an inside out stalking trip. I thought Witty had a look in here.
Well, you're going to get more than 8-1, I would bet.
All right, I'm game. I'll take it. wrong headset. There you go.
Yeah. I just noticed that Tyler's also named here at Saturday at Saratoga on a few, too. So that could be one of the old
about that.
Hold the spot. Hold the spot. Well, let's name Tyler on there. Hold the spot. See who's the best guy comes available. We'll slide him on.
Uh-huh. Well, that's Wesley is famous for that. He's one of his go-to moves. That and scratching.
That's true.
No disrespect. The guy is phenomenal, and he spots his horses. I mean, he's making good use of Monmouth. He won their Golden Bell, won an allowance race last week, and he's been very live shipping in to this meet.
And he shipped last week to Del Mar and won with Twilight Gleaming, won out there. Race didn't go. Put him on a boat and won at Del Mar. So
the one thing about the jockey naming, including him naming and everybody loves Wesley, but the naming of riders that absolutely are not going to be there.
Not his fault.
You're right. The racing office should not allow
it. It is up to the racing officials and the institutional authority to see what's happening and protect the betting public.
Correct.
Well, and so now entries, who knows if they're taken on the same day, and who knows if he hasn't decided where he's going.
But he's done it with retired riders, and naming guys that are in Europe and so forth.
He has a sense of humor. He may take some pleasure out of it.
So yeah, it's up to the individual.
And I get it. I get it. It's a revolving door, especially on the East Coast, and you know, you want to do the best you can for your horse and for your owner. But at the same time, I think we would agree that there are certain levels of transparency, especially in this era, that we'd all like to adhere to.
Exactly.
What will happen sometimes, and not just Wesley's case, but a lot of cases, they might get hustled into a race late and not have a call.
That's different.
And so, hey, you know what?
We get that.
We'll do something. But
we'll get that.
But anyway, we'll keep an eye on that situation.
We should also mention, before we move off of the some of the regional days, I didn't reach out to Marty because I'm sure he wasn't done yet, but Ellis has got the former preview day for Kentucky Downs on Sunday, and there's some terrific races the way it came up, including that Evan Williams mile, which is really good. So keep maybe Mr. Dumas overpowers that group. But anyway, it's a very big day on Sunday that we're not going to have a chance to talk to and talk about in depth. Marcus, let's shift gears to the way you approach the weekend in the game plan picks, which include the Whitney, the Glens Falls, and the California Dreamin'.
Well, yeah. I mean, have you had a lot of Whitney conversations yet?
A little bit. I mean, certainly after the draw, and then this morning just before you, Tim Schramm joined us from Breeders' Cup to talk about the future wager that they're initiating for the Classic. So we
when does that close?
Sunday at 6 or 6:30. Let me see. It's right here.
I wish these things closed before the big race that we had.
Well, yeah.
That's not just this race, but...
No, that's a true future rager when you're betting before.
Exactly. And,
you know, I totally agree. Like you always wonder why they didn't do it Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I don't know. Do they wouldn't
That's
get the
right.
handle? But not have
yeah.
not having the weekend handle. But that ideally, especially the
7:30 on Sunday,
the Derby stuff too. I mean, you know, why have
exactly
the horse that win that you like that wins and pays $50 in the prep that all of a sudden is now 10-1 kind of blows the future thing. So
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe.
Well, Steve, I asked if you how much talk you'd had because I wonder. I mean, I think this is one of the best races of the year. Really, I know it's a huge field, but this is just a fascinating contest.
There's no doubt, and the obvious, you know, the obvious answers. You know, they're logical, but they don't have to be the result. I mean, it doesn't have to be Life is Good or Olympiad because I don't think Hot Rod Charlie or American Revolution are, you know, marginalized by any means here. There's a little bit of, you know, a little bit of intrigue into the first turn, the mile and the eighth. How are you approaching it?
Well, I agree with you. I tiered Hot Rod Charlie and American Revolution apart. I give Hot Rod Charlie a better chance than American Revolution, although American Revolution is the other horse who I could see a path to victory. We'll see. He's a fascinating horse. He's a very unusual animal, the way he goes. If you watch his work, he comes off the turn, he's almost sideways, he turns his head like radically to the side all the time, and he's got this weird stride where it doesn't even look like he's going anywhere, but he's going fast. I think he's pretty good. I just don't quite think he's going to win. I do think Hot Rod Charlie is being undervalued and underrated. I went back and watched his Belmont again just because I wanted to remember how spectacularly he ran. 22.78 was the first quarter mile that he set. That was a split that he set in that race. That is, and I a few years ago did a long story about Belmont pace, and I have. Don't have the specifics, but I know that is usually completely that annihilates a horse who goes that fast. Not only did he not stop, he ran his last quarter mile faster than his penultimate quarter mile and gave Essential Quality, who got the run of the race, all he wanted. To me, it just shows that in the Pennsylvania Derby, where he really ran away from Midnight Bourbon. This horse at his best, and his best may come from leading or being right off the pace. He's very good. The Dubai World Cup, he absolutely hated that race course. I know the irony is he'd been in Dubai for months or weeks, couple months, but he struggled badly on that very laboring track that night. I don't even know how he ran second. And the Salvatore mile, he ran into a very, very good two-turn miler in Mind Control in what was just a prep race. I do think that they're going to hustle him out of the gate. I don't know that he is as fast as Life is Good, but I think he's going to pressure him. Life is Good is 6-5. I have never seen personally a horse that trains as good as this horse does. I in Dubai, it almost made it worth getting up at 4 in the morning to go see him train at 5. He's that fun to watch. And the two workouts that I saw the video of, I mean, you won't ever see a horse gallop out like that. His gallop outs are as good as his work to the wire. He just keeps going and going and going at this amazing pace. He's going to be formidable, and you know, he could really put his stamp on this race and on his position in as a racehorse, because I do think he is exceptionally talented. In the end, I also think that he's a miler. That's not to say he can't get a mile and an eighth in top company, but I've loved Olympiad all year. His cigar mile was a bizarre ride and situation. If you throw that out, he's nothing but winning. I liked him going into Fairgrounds. He came out of Fairgrounds even better. He had a really tough trip in the Ali Sheba and overcame it. And in the Stephen Foster, I know there was no life as good in there, but this horse tested a strong pace. First time he did that really in his run at two-turn success, and he was going away at the end again. I still think, even after going steadily since last September, there's more in the tank. I mean, Mott has just managed this colt right along. He's super smart. He's got intelligence and rateability to go with his speed, and he looks like he has just continued to grow and develop. I watching video of his last two works, he's an absolute monster. I think his tactical versatility is going to come in really handy, and I just like him slightly better at a better price than Life is Good going a mile and a half on Saturday.
I can't argue with anything. My only complaint with Olympiad was last summer here when we all thought we were onto him at the right price, and we got Baby Yoded. that one will remain.
It's a lifetime stain.
it's unbelievable. I mean, at least American Pharoah, when he lost to Ohm, at least Ohm went on and had a, you know, fulfilled a lot of different, opportunities.
Well, okay, Baby Yoda is not bad. He's just not like four and a half length better than Olympiad, right?
That one, we all sat there like, what just happened?
I know the feeling. You got what you were looking for, but you got nothing.
Exactly right. This is really fun, and Marcus, we've touched base repeatedly through this middle portion of the year, and you know, I'm not and Hammer's the racing official, racing secretary, racing director. I'm not trying to defend racing offices, but wouldn't you rather have this group than a group of 12 with a very good favorite, a couple of solid stake horses? I'd rather have this.
Well, I mean, it depends what you're looking for. Like, if you want a series of races on which to gamble, sure, I get it. But this is, if you like horse racing, this is the race you want to see. This is Breeders' Cup level, you know, competition. We've got a fabulous group of older dirt route horses, which has always been like the glamour division in American racing. And to see a bunch of them meet up at this great race meet on Saturday afternoon in August, it's just like, you got to see it.
Exactly right. All right, let's get some opinion on the Glens Falls as well.
Okay, I like Mr. Mott here too, but I'm trying to beat Warlike Goddess. I mean, she's phenomenal. I love the horse. I thought she was the best horse in the Breeders' Cup. She had a little tying up incident that cost her the start, you know, at Belmont, and that's, you know, she's fit, she's back. I think that there's no way she'd be anywhere near this race if she weren't completely over that. I just wonder, I mean, I think this is presumption. She's exactly the same horse now as she was a year ago. She did a lot last year. She came a long way. And that incident just might be, to me, emblematic and representative of maybe she's not quite as solid this year. And validating that, you know, I watched her last, her only turf work recently for this race. And compared to the way she worked for the Glens Falls last year on turf, I mean, I may be grasping at straws, but I just wasn't quite as impressed. But it's just one of those situations. And Matarea is the same way in the test. And I do think Matarea is not as invulnerable as she's going to be perceived to be. And I felt the same way here. Like, this is a, like, we see this happen regularly. We're just out of the blue. A horse an odds-on favorite who looks, you know, impenetrable, suddenly comes up a little short. And Petrichor, Amat's other horse, has plenty of room to improve at a very fair price. This is the stretch out to a mile and a half, I think, is really going to suit this horse. The dam and the family, they all want to go at this far at least. And it's an excellent Judmont family, too. This go two generations back, and you're going to find a boatload of excellent horses. Not just that, but two starts ago in the Mint Julep, she was out the back door behind a slow pace, had absolutely zero chance in that race. And her trip in the Big Dreyfus was epically horrible. So you get a little extra bang for your buck off of two running lines to secure the forward direction. I feel like this filly is going.
Well, it's fine with me because it gives me a chance. It always gives me a chance to ask people what Petrichor means. It's a fabulous word.
Okay, tell me what it means.
Petrichor is a description of the smell after a spring rain or after a rain after a dry period.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah, it's so funny that that Judmont used this because I've got a list of names that I keep potentially to name horses, and Petrichor has been on that list for years, and then all of a sudden it shows up. I guess I could still use it because this is it's a Great Britain, it's got the GB, so there's still room for a North American Petrichor.
That's a great name.
You just gave it away. You better do it fast, Steve.
It reminds me of one of my favorite words that I see driving: Virga.
Virga. It's got to do with green.
Well, it's rain that doesn't reach the ground.
Wow.
So when you see that in the distance.
Oh, yeah. The clouds. Like when we were in the petrified forest.
Exactly. So Gene always goes, say it. Go ahead and say it. All right. There it is. It's Virga. So I always like that word.
I love it. I got a funny naming story when I get a chance. Remind me to bring it up. I it's kind of... Marcus, how about I'm in 6-1 on Petrichor. I'm all for it. How about the California Dream and your third game plan play?
Big full field, really interesting race, ton of speed. I like it when people have a very specific plan and seemingly a good plan for their horse. And I haven't met Dean Peterson, the trainer of Carmelita's Man, but it sure looks to me like this gelding has been pointed to this spot since he turned in an excellent finish to win the Crystal Water May 28th at Santa Anita. He was back working 2 weeks later, has kept a steady pattern, has worked well at Del Mar before. He's going to slot in just behind the speed while saving ground from post two under a jockey for whom he has improved vastly through his five-year-old season. He's 5-1 on the line. I would take it.
Jay Privman, who's going to join us next. I think I saw the headline. I don't know if Jay doesn't necessarily, you guys don't necessarily write the headlines, but I think pulled from the story, the toughest cowbred race ever was intimated.
I wouldn't disagree. I was kind of shocked when I started going horse by horse. I mean, not above the law, won the Del Mar Derby, but if you go back and watch that race, that was maybe one of the best trips the turf horse has ever had in a full field. I'm not saying that he didn't have to be good enough to take advantage, but he got through on the rail every second that he needed to, and didn't run back to that. So I think he could. I'm not that worried about the layoff, but he has been off for a while, and he might be better next time than this time.
Marcus Hirsch is never better or worse than the last time. Exactly. always. I love it. Marcus, this was great. DRF Hirsch, everybody. A very good, busy, eclectic weekend headlined right here by one of the most historic, although it's not the oldest, race at Saratoga, but it's certainly Saratoga's absolute standard for the older horses. The Whitney, and Marcus, enjoy the weekend. Good luck. We'll talk next week or soon.
Yeah, enjoy. Take it easy.
There it is. Marcus Hirsch, everybody. Let's take the break as things, boy, it's a little quiet here, and maybe part of that is Hall of Fame induction going on across the street in about a half an hour. The ceremony will start. It'll be emceed by Tom Durkin. What can you, exactly, what can you say about Hammer? But it's right now, I'm a little surprised that it seems
that sedate. That has to be it. It starts at 10:30, right?
Yeah, but they only put a handful of people in the pavilion. And of course, speaking of the pavilion, the Humphrey Finney across the street. If you are going to be in Saratoga and hanging over from this weekend, not with a hangover, but hanging over, you can attend Monday and Tuesday the sale, the Saratoga Select Yearling Sale. Monday and Tuesday evening, one of the most exciting and fun and fascinating people watching, auction watching events anywhere. So if you've never done it, Seth always talks about this. If you've never done it, carve out part of Monday and Tuesday night. The local restaurants aren't going to be happy, but it is unique. And then if you're not going to be here the following weekend, Saturday and Sunday next week, the New York Bread Sale, which is, it's a little bit more sedate and a little bit more genteel. It's not as packed, but it's still the action. And Hammer is always around for the sale.
Well, it's one of the reasons I come up,
yeah.
Just to, see a lot of people. And it is a little intimidating, but like Steve said, take a half hour. Park wherever you can park, and it's open. I mean, you can wander in.
Yeah.
And you'll
Don't be embarrassed or think, I can't go in there.
No, you can go
Absolutely
in.
Absolutely can.
Go in and buy a beer, do a loop, and, literally, watch people spend a lot of money on horses. And
like Bob Barron, who just went by with Dale Romans.
But
promises fulfilled.
Yeah. And so you can make the loop and, go out. You don't have to spend, more than 15, 20 minutes. But
no, if you get there, you're gonna hang around.
Yeah.
It's tremendous fun. Let's not keep Jay Pribman waiting. Prib is next. Scully and Shapiro to follow. Dave Grenig, Nick Tamaro, and more. At the Races, we're live. Sirius 219, XM 201. Had some people ask, including Bill Strauss. Bill had lost track of what channel we were on, and his pal. Back after this. Here's the weekend preview, brought to you by Twin Spires. And it should be great.
On Sirius XM Radio.
Thoroughbred horse racing is back in Virginia as Colonial Downs conducts its More Racing, More Money summer season presented by Woodford Reserve. An early week racing schedule, an average daily purses of $625,000. The 9-week meet runs from July 11th through September 7th with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m. Wager on Colonial's 50-cent pick 5 with a low 12% takeout and a new carryover provision. All races will be broadcast on TVG this summer. Colonial Downs racing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday at 1:45 p.m.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com.